Blog Talk Radio.
Well, hello and welcome to this podcast. In today's segment, we'll be talking with Mr. Kiani Lee, the chief architect at a leading cybersecurity firm known as Virtual Armor. They're based out of Centennial, Colorado. Kiani, thanks for your time. Let's go ahead and get started.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Yeah, we looked up your bio, and you seem to have a very deep and rich background in cybersecurity. Can you tell us more of your career, some highlights of your career, please?
Yeah, sure. So I actually started off on the customer side prior to joining Virtual Armor. I worked for a fairly large companies, and I started off in the networking side of the house, and I started off as a network engineer, moved my way up, and I eventually became principal network architect at these firms. However, as my time evolved, I got more and more involved with security. Obviously, networking and security really go hand in hand. So I think it's a pretty valuable asset to have the background that I have of networking, which has then led me into information security. And then, of course, as history had it, I joined Virtual Armor about 2.5, close to 3 years ago, and I've been in the role ever since.
Okay, congratulations. Now, how long has Virtual Armor been in business? Has it been around for a long time, or how did it come about?
Yeah, so Virtual Armor has been around since 2001. We started off as a reseller as well as a professional services organization, and what set us apart initially was our deep engineering expertise, and that really continues to this day. Our managed security services practice started in 2006 for a Fortune 500 company. The organization we were performing resale as well as professional services for this company, and they asked us to manage their network as well as manage their security infrastructure, specifically their SIM, and it has evolved into that, from that, I should say, into obviously a much greater offering of information security management for our customers. So, and actually, funny thing enough, that customer that kicked it all off, they are still customer of ours to this day. So we do have a really high 90 percentile customer retention rate. So they are still around, and they're still one of our customers.
Yeah, excellent. Now, does Virtual Armor have a presence in other countries as well? Are you located globally?
Absolutely. So our headquarters is Denver, Colorado, the little suburb that's just south of Denver called Centennial, to be specific. We have SOC NOC, a hybrid security operations center, network operations center, in Salt Lake City, Utah, as well as Middlesbrough, UK, which is the northern United Kingdom. Most of our customers are, however, U.S.-based, but because they are large enterprise organizations, they tend to have numerous offices around the world. So our SOC NOC provides 24/7, 365, follow-the-sun coverage for our customers, and we also have that model so that we don't make our engineers work outside of their regular working hours, if you will, because no one is really that effective when they're up at 3 a.m. Trying to troubleshoot an issue. So we don't make our engineers do that. They work regular hours, and then that gets handed off to the next SOC as the day continues on. We do also have customers that are headquartered elsewhere, particularly in Europe. So we do have other customers besides just U.S.-based customers that are, of course, internationally located throughout Europe, North America, Asia, et cetera.
Okay. Now, let's drill down further into Virtual Armor. What is your typical customer base like, or who are you trying to target? Is the small, medium-sized business, the larger company, like the Fortune 500, or is it a combination of both of these, or is even the federal government a customer?
So we generally don't discriminate against our customers. We have a wide gamut of customers, ranging from smaller organizations. Our definition of small organizations is, you know, maybe smaller regional credit unions, all the way up to Fortune 25 customers, as I mentioned earlier. So, but I would say ideally we target medium-sized enterprises and up. So let's put the line at Fortune 2000 and higher. Given our expertise and our focus of just managing networking and security, generally speaking, small organizations don't benefit as much. When I say smaller, I mean like a mom-and-pop shop. They don't really have the enterprise needs like a larger company would. So we would say Fortune 2000 companies is our sweet spot. We also have customers spanning every vertical, but we particularly focus on the four verticals of retail, manufacturing, finance, and healthcare because, well, those are common targets for hacking and breaches and just security risks in general. So that's not to say that other businesses and other organizations don't suffer from information security challenges, but really those four are particularly targeted and really are commonly looking for security expertise and managed services to bolster their in-house staff.
Okay, sounds good. Now let's get into what Virtual Armor actually does. You get to manage SIEM, the managed firewall, and managed endpoints. Could you please elaborate more on these in a little bit more detail and how it's used in cybersecurity?
Yeah, sure. So as I mentioned initially, we started off really just managing managing SIEM and managing firewall. That was basically our core competency back in 2006 when we started. Obviously, we've branched out significantly beyond that. And what we call these service offerings, service modules, and they're discrete packages, if you will, that describe our service offerings that we provide for our customers. And we actually have quite a few beyond just these three. But these three are our core bread and butter, where the majority of our managed services customers subscribe to one, two, or in many cases, all three of these offerings. So the first one being managed SIEM, of course, that's really the full care and feeding of your SIEM. That's the all the way from the initial stand-up and the initial deployment to the tuning and ensuring that there are no silent log sources, to ensuring that all of your logs from across your infrastructure makes it into the SIEM, whether your log source is on-premise or in the cloud or hosted environment. So our first goal is to make sure that all of those logs are making it to the SIEM. Furthermore, we then ensure that the log messages are parsed correctly, normalized, and properly categorized, because a large amount of our customers, they may have a SIEM, but it's not tuned, not properly configured, and really just contributes to alert fatigue and tons of noise. So you wouldn't believe the number of customers that we talk with where the security engineers get in at 8 a.m. in the morning and they have 1,000 unacknowledged alerts, and they just hit Control A, select them all, and then hit acknowledge and clear their dashboard, which really doesn't do anyone any benefit. So we make sure that all of the alerts that are coming in are actually not false positives and actually mean something and are actionable. So in that, certain things can be done to properly remediate that alert or what's generating the alert rather than just hitting clear or acknowledge in the SIEM dashboard. So the continual tuning as well as the elimination of false positives. Moving on to managed firewalls, that would be basically ensuring that your perimeter defense or next-gen firewalls are properly configured. We handle all the day-to-day operations of your firewall platform in terms of rules and policy changes, as well as proper routing, proper security policies, et cetera, of that nature, updates, all of those things. And managed endpoint is managing the security tools installed on the customer endpoint. So we don't manage the endpoint in terms of providing help desk support or anything like that of that nature, but we do manage the endpoint from the perspective of security. So ensuring that the security tool that is installed on the host is properly configured, the security policies and the alerting is properly configured as well and tuned, and ensuring that if the endpoint were to get compromised, we are able to remediate as well and prevent a similar threat from occurring in that organization.
Okay. Now, can you tell us more about the technological architecture that you use at VirtualArmor?
Yeah, sure. So most of our products and our tools that we utilize are commercial. However, they have been heavily customized by our engineers. But really, the main emphasis is that the skill set and the knowledge of our engineers is really our secret sauce. And the automation that we've built, as well as the API connections, and ensuring that the security tool sets are able to communicate with each other is really the most important component. Many customers complain that they've purchased a number of security tools and there's just sprawl. Some of them are partially implemented, some of them aren't implemented at all, some of them are implemented improperly, and none of them communicate with each other. None of them really actually make the organization any more secure. So, and they're just yet another source of alerting and noise and which contributes to alert fatigue. So we come in and are able to tie most of their security tools, most if not all of their security tools together with the SIM, of course, as the anchor, the single pane of glass, the dashboard that ties it all together. Furthermore, we also leverage a automation platform called Phantom, and this is our incident response platform. Within Phantom, we have written numerous automated playbooks that run and trigger based on certain alerts that are coming into the SIM, which then kick off certain actions within the rest of the security tool sets to then ultimately troubleshoot, triage, do incident investigation, threat correlation, and perform threat hunting and check for lateral movement, as well as ultimately remediate and prevent. All of that can be automated, and a lot of what our engineers do is building the automation around various scenarios. And then, of course, the back-end ticketing system that we use would be ServiceNow. It's a pretty industry-standard ticketing system that most of our customers use as well. And all three of those, the SIM, the incident response platform, and the ticketing system, all play together to have a cohesive security platform that other tools build on top of.
Okay, sounds excellent. Now, have you dealt with cyber threats like ransomware, business email compromise, cryptojacking, so forth?
Yeah, absolutely. It's funny that you mentioned cryptojacking and crypto mining in general. I actually gave a talk about it a few months ago in San Francisco about what we've experienced with cryptojacking amongst our customers and in the field in general. So definitely ransomware, email compromising and cryptojacking are common day-to-day, but they're certainly common events that we deal with amongst our customer base. But of course, you know, there are tools and things that we can do to prevent and ultimately remediate if something like this were to happen. I don't want to get too much into the details because honestly, we can spend an hour talking about each of these particular threat types and how we go about remediating and gathering incident information, but suffice to say that we do have a tool set, and really, actually, you mentioned it earlier in one of the earlier questions, between managed SIEM, managed firewall, managed endpoint, that those three service modules alone go a long way in stopping ransomware, email, cryptojacking.
Sounds excellent. Now, do you have any customer success stories that you'd like to share with us, or any case studies that you're allowed to share with us?
Yeah, we have numerous case studies and references all posted on our website. So without mentioning any customers in particular by name, I will reference the scenario and how we came in and redesigned, re-architected, and put in protections in place. The first one is a manufacturing / education organization, and they are a global nonprofit organization that has numerous locations around the world, and they are they deal with very sensitive information that is constantly targeted by malicious actors. And initially, the customer's environment was, for a lack of a better term, in need of assistance. So they had a SIEM, they had endpoint protections in place. However, nothing was properly tuned, and they've been dealing with numerous compromises and data exfiltration events. So they have been compromised in the past. When we came in, the very first thing we did started off with a professional services engagement to redesign their network. They were migrating from one service provider to another service provider. We used that opportunity to redo their entire network, both their WAN as well as their LAN. And then we then addressed the security aspects once the network was rectified. And we were able to prevent numerous security breaches from occurring once everything had been properly tuned and properly architected. So that was probably the first good example of something that really we grabbed the project by the reins and was able to provide a complete solution set around both networking and security to greatly advance the maturity level of the infrastructure at this particular organization. The second example I'll reference is another manufacturing company, but this time in the healthcare industry. Also, similar to the first example, this customer is a global organization, a Fortune 500 company, and disparate offices around the world, about 90 or so offices. And we, again, similar to the first engagement, we've been working with this customer for years now, really just advancing and maturing their business practice around IT security as well as network and infrastructure. And we've completely overhauled their network twice now. And in a similar fashion as the first example I gave, completely overhauled their wide area network, so did a backbone deployment. Furthermore, we've also replaced all of their firewalls and helped migrate their firewalls from a legacy platform to a next-gen firewall platform. So I would say those two are kind of some of our largest engagements in terms of level effort as well as time spent. But they both have paid significant dividends for the customers in question.
Excellent. So that's wonderful. Now, obviously, there are many cybersecurity vendors out there. What separates Virtual Armor from the rest of the crowd? Why should a customer say, hey, I'm going to pick you ahead of everybody else?
Yeah, so I would say there's a lot of differentiating factors. But I would say the two main differentiating factors that I feel are is particularly compelling is the first is most managed service providers, they're yet another alerting platform. They look at logs, they ingest logs, they look at information that's coming in to their sensors, and then they would send you an alert and say, hey, we may have noticed a security incident going on in your environment. You may want to look into it. This may be a breach or this may be a compromise. And that's really about it. That's really all they do. They lob it over the fence. So they're essentially a glorified alerting platform. We go much further beyond that. I'm not familiar with another company that goes the distance that we do. So we go all the way from the initial alerting, just like everybody else. But we follow it through with triaging. We do incident investigation. We do threat correlation, threat hunting. And we ultimately, if we are able, in the case of being the managed services provider for the firewall, the endpoint, or some security tool that can then take an action, we are able to then ultimately remediate the threat to ensure that it'll never happen again, and then prevent similar threats, similar categories from occurring in their environment in the future as well. So really, it's the full security lifecycle. That's the in short of it. That's the main differentiating factor. So basically, we are an extension of the security team at your organization. The second.
Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead. Yeah, the second differentiating factor. The second differentiating factor is the customization that we provide for customers. So, again, some of the other managed service providers, they have a one size fits all. This is the way we operate. This is the way we do things. We'll deploy a BlackBox solution into your environment. You send logs to it, and you don't have access to the box that we deploy. You can't log in. Don't look at ourselves as we don't hold your data hostage. We look at ourselves as shepherds of your data in that it's your data. You have the ability to log in and access it at any time. And we are simply using your data to alert you and to ultimately make you safer. And we don't believe in a one-size-fits-all solution. So we don't say, this is the way we do things. This is it. This is the only way. And you, the customer, have to adapt to the way we do things. It's actually the opposite. Almost all of our deployments and our solutions are bespoke and customized based on the customer's environment. Because, you know, as cheesy as it sounds, no two networks, no two IT infrastructures are the same. They're all snowflakes. So why should a solution that a service provider provide be a one size? It just doesn't make any sense. So, like I said, customizability and the full security lifecycle are differentiators.
Excellent. Now, 2018, I would say, was probably the start of, you know, more accountability held for the C-suite, especially for the CIO and the CISO. And, you know, there is a lot of talk now about holding them responsible. There have been a lot of, like, firings and this, that, and so forth. What are your thoughts on making the C-suite more accountable for the cybersecurity that takes place at their respective organizations? Will this be a growing topic coming into 2019?
Absolutely. It's funny that you mentioned this question, because this is a conversation that I had with one of my customers on Friday, actually, just a few days ago. And there's a couple of key points surrounding this topic. I think the reason why we're seeing so many security breaches day in and day out, it constantly makes the news. You know, we can reference many large companies over the past few years that have revealed they've been compromised, and you know, this data or that data has been leaked. I think that the biggest issue is there's not, unlike Europe, there's not an equivalent of a GDPR for the U.S. Market, for the U.S. Ecosystem. There's no accountability for the C-suites to actually ensure that they don't get compromised. I mean, the worst that happens is they get let go. Provide credit monitoring to their customers, but that's really about it. No C-level or the CISO, CIO, COO, nobody is going to jail for any of this, and nobody is getting personally fined. So there's really no accountability or a severe lack of accountability. Unlike what GDPR put in place in Europe, there's a significant amount of accountability on the C-level, but really the onus is on the company in general to keep the customer data safe. And there are severe consequences if you don't. I think that this is something that I don't want to get into the politics, because there's obviously this is a very politically charged topic or nature around this question. So it really would take legislation and consumer protection laws for this to actually pass and to actually make a significant impact. I think the second thing around this, how to make the C-suite more accountable, is that there needs to be additional investment into information security, in that C-level executives should look at information security as an investment, not as a cost center. And what's happening is, up until the point that a company gets breached, they bare minimum to reach some level of compliance and call it good until they get breached. And of course, they significantly boost up the spending on information security. So, and then they take it a lot more seriously. That attitude really needs to shift into investing into information security first and foremost to prevent a breach from occurring, not the other way around. And again, it's very complicated in that how do we enforce that? How do we make sure that actually is the case? And really it also boils down to politics. So I don't want to get too far down this rabbit hole, but suffice to say, there definitely needs to be work in making the C-suite more accountable. And it's really up to debate as to how the best way to go about it is.
It sounds like it's definitely going to be a complex topic to be dealt with, you know, very lot, you know, it's a very politically charged issue. But now, what are your general plans for expansion for Virtual Armor? Do you plan to offer new products or services, or do you plan to enter new markets, or perhaps a combination of both?
Yeah, definitely. It's absolutely going to be a combination of both. From a product side, we have a customer portal that we have built from the ground up, from scratch, that ties in with our ticketing system, as well as our incident response platform, and as well as a lot of the security tools that we manage. So customers are able to log into the portal and see, get a very nice 10,000-foot overview of the overall health and state of their environment. Are there any active threats? Are there any devices that are down? Are there any alerts, et cetera, so on and so forth? So that is constantly being updated and iterated upon, and there will be a major redesign coming down in 2019 timeframe. As for additional services, we constantly evaluate additional security tools. The security space and the security vendor space in general is a very, very disparate space currently, in that there are literally hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of security vendors and with a lot of overlap and a lot of different vendors and products under each security category. And of course, new security categories or new security tools are constantly being invented and presented and brought to market. So our role as thought leaders and as security experts is to evaluate on behalf of our customers what actually is not just pure marketing and what is actually a functional tool that will make your organization more secure. So I'm constantly evaluating the security tool landscape, and if we find something that is very promising, we will provide an additional service around that tool, around that new tool category. And then of course with that comes the additional automation that I mentioned earlier, based on our incident response platform, and additional API tie-ins between our existing tools and that new tool that we are bringing into our managed platform. So definitely expanding products and services. As for new markets, we are absolutely growing rapidly, and we are planning international expansion later this year. Those details are still being solidified, so I can't comment on that at this exact time, but we are definitely expanding our territories, if you will, to additional offshore locations, geographic regions.
Wow, it sounds like you got some good growth plans there. Now, that kind of leads us to our other question here, which you kind of touched upon last. How do you foresee the cyber threat landscape changing and evolving in the coming years, like the coming couple of years, decade or so? Is it always going to be changing like it's a cat and mouse game? And is it so hard to keep up the cyber attacker?
Yeah, definitely. It is, you know, security is really, like you mentioned, it is a cat and mouse game. And it's funny because information security, while we look at it as a new field, a very new field, it really reflects human behavior from since antiquity, since the dawn of the human age. There has always been theft. There has always been attempted theft. That's not new at all whatsoever. So information security is really just bringing that, I guess, human nature, human tendency to steal things into the digital age, and then how do we guard and how do we safeguard our digital assets? So instead of, you know, guarding a physical good, we're now dealing with digital items or digital wallets, if you will. So bad guys will always try to steal what they can, and they are getting smarter in that they're constantly devising new and unforeseen ways to attack and constantly expanding the attack surface. And our job as Blue Team, as defenders, is to limit the attack surface. I think a way in particular that malicious actors will use to expand their breadth and scope of their attacks is to leverage automation from their perspective. So, you know, they're now launching attacks with far greater frequency and far more volume than ever before in the past because, you know, again, if you go bring it back to the previous example of physical versus digital goods, if you try to rob one person one time, you may not be successful, but if you try to rob a million people a million times, probably you're going to succeed at least once. And so the way to counter that, of course, would be to use automation as defenders. And that's where we see the increasing rise of AI and machine learning to try to recognize attacks and ideally to recognize an attack never before seen and then categorize it correctly as an attack. So definitely that's definitely one way that the landscape will change. Additionally, I think there's going to be a greater involvement by nation state level threat actors, without naming specific countries out there, we're all familiar with them, that are highly implicated in large scale attacks is both in the past as well as in the present. So launching APTs and threats that remain dormant and latent in an environment for months or years, I think that we're going to see more and more of those come to light in the future. So, that's definitely an additional thing that companies have to contend with.
Okay. Now, what do you think the biggest cyber threat will be? I mean, do you think it'll be the crypto jacking that seems to be evolving, or will there just be new variants of existing attacks? What's your foresight into that?
Yeah, so there's so many that I can name, but I think I was thinking about this, and there are many different emerging threats that are all coming to light, but they all really tie back to the people element. And what I mean by that is the weakest link in your organization is not your servers or your network or whatever. It's your people. It's the people. And it's how do you balance the fine line between user productivity and security? So if you tip the scale in one dimension, for example, let's say you lock down endpoints such that they're perfectly secure, well, user productivity would basically drop to zero. And vice versa. If you go completely the opposite way, where you don't bound your users and their behavior, you don't curb their behavior, your organization is very prone to being compromised and so on and so forth. So I think the biggest cybersecurity threat will definitely be your users, and it always has been, and I think it'll continue to be that. And really every threat boils down to that one as its root cause, as the core, the crux of the issue. So as managed security service providers, we have to try to balance and walk that fine line between productivity and security, and how to provide security in the least intrusive and ideally invisible manner, such that the users never know that they're actually being that they're being secured. That's really the challenge going forward.
Now, a new trend is coming up here called the Internet of Things, or IoT. We're all connected to everything. To me, it's kind of scary. When do you think we'll see this implemented on a global basis? I mean, right now I see sporadic cases of it, like maybe smart home. You know, we hear about Siri and Cortana, you know, the BPAs on Samsung and the iPhone. What's your thought on the IoT?
I think, again, this is a relatively new term, but it's been describing a trend that's been happening for a lot longer than we give it credit for. Really, I would say IoT began with smartphones. Everyone has a different opinion as to when the first smartphone came to market, but call it mid to late 2000s. That's really the beginnings of IoT and having always on, always internet connected devices all the time, and an explosion of these devices. Obviously, now everybody has a smartphone. They're completely ubiquitous in our society. But to your about I guess the most common definition of IoT in, you know, smart fridges, smart light bulbs, smart homes, things of that nature. Yeah, absolutely. That is as more and more of those come online, you're increasing the attack surface, and a lot of them have very little security or extremely weak security. A lot of them come and ship with a default username and password that can't be changed or is very difficult to change. And then, of course, the processing power of a smart fridge or a smart thermostat is very weak. But if you have a million of them, 10 million, 50 million of them, you can definitely launch a pretty sizable denial of service attack. And that's exactly what we've seen in the last few years. So I think we're going to have to start looking at these new and up-and-coming IoT devices in the same way we look at securing smartphones, in that there are now a pretty developed and mature market for mobile device management. We're going to have to expand that and apply that to IoT devices in the near future, lest we continue experiencing denial of service attacks and easily compromisable IoT devices down the road. So,
okay.
Definitely.
Sure. Yeah, IoT, to me, it's kind of a scary thing. I mean, I've written a number of blogs on it, and just the interconnectivity of it just really seems it's too scary for me. I'm kind of one of those old-fashioned guys, you know, hardly have any mobile apps. I kind of like things, keep things simple, you know. But as we
right.
wrap up our show now, I always get this question asked to me, like, what are the top two or three things I can do to protect myself from being a victim of cyber attack? I ask this to all of my podcast guests, so I'm asking the same thing too. From your deep experience in cybersecurity, what are like the top two or three things you can recommend to a business or an individual and say, hey, here's some tips to help mitigate, you know, cyber attack? Obviously, you know, there's no 100% defense, but what are your top tips that you can provide or some general insights?
Sure. So I think I'll start with the personal side of the things first. Everybody should use a password manager. Nobody should be repeating passwords on any site ever. And every password should be a completely randomly generated jumble of letters, numbers, uppercase, lowercase, symbols, characters. There should be no reason why you're repeating a base word like, you know, your dog's name, add a number, and add an exclamation mark, and then change that up a little bit for every site you go to, every service that you use. As I mentioned earlier in the show, every day you hear of a breach, a security incident, and what's happening is they're getting these reused passwords, and then obviously your email address, which is often your username, is really easy to get. And all they have to do is, I mean, supercomputers can guess 100 quadrillion password combinations in a second. I mean, by adding an extra character like an exclamation mark or a question mark, it doesn't do anything in terms of actually keeping bad guys out of your other accounts that have very similar passwords. That's I would say that's on the individual side. From a business perspective, really, every organization should have complete visibility and insight into their environment. And where I'm going with this is every organization should have a centralized log collector, ideally a SIEM. If you don't have one, you should get one. For certain, you can't do anything without having the information, the intelligence, the view, if you will, into your environment. If you don't have any insight into your own environment, what's actually happening, it's hard to actually take any meaningful action towards protecting yourself or protecting your organization. So if you don't have a SIEM, get a SIEM. If you do have a SIEM and it's untuned or nobody looks at it, and again, you're the example that I gave earlier where your engineers come in the morning and there's a dozen or hundreds of alerts and they don't even look at it, they just clear the screen, that doesn't really do you much good either. It's a little bit better than not having a SIEM, but not by much. So in that case, if you don't have the resources, if you don't have the skill set to do it in-house, you should get a managed service provider to look into that and actually make your product, your SIEM, your investment meaningful in terms of actually trying to keep your organization more secure. So that those two, I would say, are the biggest takeaways from a business organization security perspective.
Okay. Well, Chani, we thank you very much for your time tonight and have safe travels tomorrow. And we hope to speak to you again here in the near future on another podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for the time. And it was a pleasure.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Take care.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.